The Book Nook on WYSO was presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Good morning. Welcome to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'm feeling kind of exhausted by the news cycle. I really don't want to hear any more about people conducting diplomacy on their own social media platforms or people manipulating the financial markets and making them go up and down all over the world. I'm tired of hearing about this. So let's hear about dessert. Let's hear about pie. Exactly 10 years ago today, I did my only interview with a guy named Jerry Bouchard. He is the proprietor of a chain of restaurants in Wisconsin. At the time we did this interview, he had four outlets, and currently, I just checked, he's down to three, but they're still there. They're called the Norske Nook, and they specialize in pie. Let's listen. I understand that a woman named Helen Meyer published a book on the same press, the University of Wisconsin, back in the day, and that book was called Farm Recipes and Food Secrets from the Norske Nook. For our listeners who are not from Wisconsin, which is probably most of them, what is the Norske Nook?
Helen Meyer, the original owner, bought a restaurant back in 1973 in Osseo, Wisconsin, and at that time, she wanted a unique name for it, and it's the community is populated heavily by Norwegians and Norwegian farmers, and she was asking the guys that come in for coffee every morning, you know, what should I name it? They all came up, well, you know, this is our nook. This is where we sit and have coffee, and you know, we're a bunch of Norskies, and so the Norske Nook name stuck from there, and Helen went on from there and cooked all basically farm type of meals and cafe type of setting, and became very famous for the pies.
And then in 1990, you bought the business from her.
Yes. It was a wonderful experience. Helen had it for sale just in the local paper, and it was kind of funny because I was living at the time out in Colorado with my family and looking to move back to the small rural settings from where I was from, and I was from a small town north of Osseo, and just happened to notice in the paper that there was a small cafe in a small town for sale, famous for the pies, and during the process of purchasing it, right about the exact same time of the finalized purchase, Helen went on to the David Letterman show with one of her bakers and baked a pie for David Letterman.
Hmm. Wow. So you bought the restaurant. You were living in Colorado at the time, and weren't you a police officer?
Yeah. Yep. I was. My lifelong passion when I was younger, I graduated early from high school and started college right away, and I wanted to be into law enforcement, and started in the University of Wisconsin system in the Eau Claire College, and got a couple years in, and I was working full-time at the time for a theater, and one of my buddies there, his girlfriend was working for Perkins restaurants and invited me to come there, and I ended up quitting school then and going down to Madison, and then that took me out to Colorado, and I was the youngest at the time general manager for a Perkins restaurant, and so I had some background in restaurants, and but while out there, my wife was going to school, and I decided, well, you know, I should really go and finish school, and so I did, and got into law enforcement, and after she got her law degree and stuff, and we had children, then we decided to move back to, you know, this small town, small area, and looking for law enforcement's job. I just was not having a very good luck, and I just stumbled on the Norske Nook, and I thought, well, you know, I think I can do it. And apparently, Helen had quite a few offers on it prior to me coming there, but she was fairly picky at who she wanted, and I came and toured the restaurant, and we sat down and talked for almost a whole afternoon, and she invited me back the next morning, and I got back to Colorado. I said, yeah, I'm going to do it. Called up the realtor, and he said, well, I haven't heard from Helen yet. You know, just wait until she gets back to with me and lets me know if it's okay if you put in an offer.
Mm-hmm.
And he called me a couple hours later. He said, yep, sure enough. You know, so very, very fortunate. Everything just kind of fell into place.
In case you just tuned in, this is the Book Nook, and today we're talking about the Norske Nook with Jerry Bouchard. He owns these restaurants in Wisconsin, and he has just published a book called The Norske Nook, Book of Pies and Other Recipes. And in the book, you talk about how Helen took you back there into the kitchen, and she showed you how to make pies. And this is a wonderful experience for you, wasn't it?
It really was, Vic. It was... You know, I had been around a little bit of baking with my family, my mom, and my sisters were quite a bit older, and they would let us get involved in it a little bit, but that was mostly licking the spoons. But Helen really took time with me, and her bakers that she had there at the time, they all of them just took so much time with me and worked with me and got me to feel the dough and to know how it should feel when you mix it up. And because sometimes the flour might be a little dry, and so you got to add a little bit more shortening and things like that when you're rolling out pie crusts and making sure that you have a good quality products when you're making it, making sure that you have good berries and apples and things like that. And at the time, we only made probably 10 or 12 different kinds of pies. And now, of course, we're up to over 70. With this last pie festival, we have 75 different pies now.
Wow.
So.
Well, I'm looking at the calendar. I see it's April. Does that mean that you've just been at the National Pie Championship in Florida?
Yes. Yes, we were. We really had a great time down there. We bring down usually another manager and bakery managers and couple bakers and we rotate them off between all of the stores and let them experience it and let them have the joy of coming down to it and we were very fortunate this year. We brought five down six down and five of them won. So.
You had five pies win this year?
Yes.
Which ones were the winners this year?
Death by Chocolate was my favorite, and that's the only one off the top of my head I can say right now. Because
you've won so many of these.
Every time I have it, it's like, oh, it's so good.
When they were teaching you, when Helen and her associates were teaching you how to bake pies, You were looking at the timer. You were trying to decide by the timer whether the pies were done. But they said, no, that's not how you tell. You can tell by the smell.
Yes, yes. And it's interesting because as I've grown and as we've gotten more stores and we're training new bakers in, and it's all based on what Helen and her bakers taught me is, you can set a timer for a guide, but always set it short because, the most important thing is, when you do it a lot, you learn, the smell of the blueberries when they're just right or the smell of the cinnamon and the apple or the pumpkin when it's just right. And you can also look at it and with pumpkin, you can see that just that slight glaze on the top, and it's puffed up just beautifully. And with the berry pies, if you're not quite sure, just stick a little knife in there and make sure it comes out clean with with a syrupy consistency and no, you know, chunks of sugar or flour or, you know, some of the pies we use tapioca, make sure that those are dissolved into it. And yeah, it's more of an older style of cooking when people really had no clue what their ovens were at when they used to use wood stoves.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're listening to the best of the Book Nook on WYSO at 91.3 community-owned public radio for curious listeners. We've got more pie stacked up right after this. The best of the Book Nook continues, and this morning on these first two segments, we're getting our just desserts with pie. Jerry Bouchard joins us. The book is The Norske Nook, Book of Pies and Other Recipes, just published by the University of Wisconsin Press. A beautiful, large format style cookbook with lots of photos. And as we open it up to the title page, there's a photo of a meringue pie. And I think this is the tallest meringue I think I've ever seen. Aren't you kind of famous for these?
We are. Helen, we use anywhere from 11 to 12 large egg whites, the whites from large eggs, to make that. And Helen had three of those styles when I purchased the restaurant, and we still have those same ones today. We have the sour cream raisin, the lemon, and the coconut. And we take a lot of pride in making those meringues so tall. People say, well, how do you do it? And a lot of it, you have to make sure that you do not get any egg yolk at all in there, in with the egg white. And then when you're mixing it, you got to make sure you have just the right amount of cream of tartar, and you got to mix it so it starts forming really firm peaks, and then we layer it on there and just layer it on and layer it on and stack it up. And before we put it in the oven, sometimes, you know, they're over a foot tall. So
I've eaten a few pies in my time, Jerry, and I have to believe, based on my own gustatory endeavors, that if you can't make a good pie crust, you might as well just give up. The pie crust is really key, isn't it?
It is. And like I was, we were talking about earlier in the program, that was one of the main things that Helen worked with me on, and mixing it so that as you're cutting in the shortening into the flour, you feel the consistency of it, and you do it with your fingers, you know, and make sure that it's just right. And you know, I know a lot of people out there right now probably use a mixer, but that's okay. But make sure that you feel the dough after you're done to make sure it's not too wet or too dry. If you have one too dry, yes, it's easier to roll out, but you know, then it's not as flaky. It wants to it wants to be tough. You know, it makes the crust tough.
The book is divided up into sections where we begin with crusts, and then we go into various recipes, and they're divided up by this division: toppings and puddings, Dutch and praline topped pies, double crust fruit pies, candy pies, berry pies, sour cream pies, meringue pies, single crust pies, stirred pudding pies, frozen pies, no sugar pies, and then we get into cheesecakes, torts, and muffins, and we're joined by the pie guy. Do you mind if I call you that, Jerry?
No, that's fine.
Jerry, you've done well with this. You've expanded the restaurants. You've got them in four locations now. I was talking to a friend of mine this morning, and I mentioned that I'd be talking to you, and I mentioned the Norske Nook. He goes, oh, yeah, he's from Milwaukee, and he married a woman from Eau Claire. He goes, I've eaten at the Norske Nook in Eau Claire. He said, it's awesome. You've got four locations. You've got Osseo, the original. Well, not the original. You moved across the street. Eau Claire, Hayward, and Rice Lake. On a typical summer Saturday, when you've got lots of visitors in the area, lots of people coming through to try pies, I'm just curious to know, between all four locations, how many pies would you bake to get ready for your business on a Saturday between all four locations? I want to know the number, Jerry.
Boy, that's a tough one. It's really a tough one. I'm guessing somewhere in the neighborhood, between all four locations, in the neighborhood of 500, maybe, 550, something like that.
That's a lot of pie.
It's a lot of pies.
And they're still all made by hand.
It is, yes. And we, you know, we've been approached numerous times by some equipment people who, you know, well, we can make your life a little easier. And it just, it's not the same. You have to change the dough recipes, and you have to, you know, tweak them so that the machine will work. And it's just not the same. Making them by hand and rolling the crust you know, just like on a single layer crust, we'll bake off for the pudding pies, let's say, we'll bake off anywhere from 100 to 200 a day at each store, just, you know, for the basis and in the summertime. And it really is important to do it all by hand. And that's, I'm sure that's why people love our pie.
Right. Well, I respect and admire that philosophy. My guest is Jerry Bouchard. He and Cindy Borton Parker have just published the Norske Nook Book of Pies and Other Recipes. It's full of recipes for these delicious pies that they make in Wisconsin at the Norske Nook. And from reading the book, I learned that while you were a police officer in Colorado, you developed another passion, which you've been able to fulfill. And I understand that you have a brewery in Eau Claire. Tell me about it.
I do. It's called Northwoods Brewing. And in 1997, well, let's back up. While I was a police officer, the craft brewing industry really kicked off in Colorado and in the Denver metro area and Fort Collins and all along the Front Range. There were just brew pubs popping up everywhere, and it really got me interested into home brewing. And so I was home brewing at the time for all my fellow police officers, and they really liked it. And when I first moved back to Wisconsin, beer was still pretty cheap here.
Mm-hmm.
And for a craft brewer, you know, you have to have a little higher prices for your product because, again, you're making it all from scratch. You're not, you know, mass producing it with rice and corn and things like that. You're using barley and natural ingredients. And so I kind of, as my success grew with the Norske Nook and opened, the new one across the street and then the one in Rice Lake, I was approached by the gentleman that helped build our buildings. You know, hey, we should do a brew pub in Eau Claire. And ergo, the Northwoods Brewing Corp was born in Eau Claire. And we brew anywhere from 1,000 to 1,500 barrels of beer a year there. And we have our best-known beer is Floppin' Crappie.
Floppin' Crappie, like the fish?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, when I think of Wisconsin, I think of beauty, nature. I think of cheese, delicious cheese, and I think of beer. And I actually seem to recall, aren't you from Chippewa Falls?
I went to high school up there, yes, correct.
What, was Lyon and Kugel still
in the country west of there?
What was Lyon and Kugel still an indie brewery when you were in high school?
it was brewing then. Uh-huh. It wasn't real popular at that time in the area. That was, you know, back in the day, late 60s, early 70s. And we had Walters Brewing in Eau Claire at the time too.
Oh.
And both those breweries, they weren't gaining market share for sure, you know, because of Miller and all of the larger breweries taking market share. But in the 80s is when Lyon and Kugel's really started doing well and growing.
And then Miller gobbled them up.
Yes.
Right.
Which was kind of sad.
Yeah. When I think of Chippewa Falls, I think of Leinenkugel. I think it was Mason Shoes.
They're still there.
And a guy named Robert One Man Johnson. You ever hear of him?
No.
He was
no.
a one-man band from Chippewa Falls.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, and when he'd tour, he would always do a plug for Leinenkugel's and for Mason Shoes.
Oh, how funny.
It was pretty sweet. My guest is Jerry Bouchard. His book is The Norske Nook, Book of Pies and Other Recipes. We better talk about some of these recipes, Jerry, or people are going to go, hey, this is a pie book. Tell us about these pies.
What would you like to know?
Well, tell me something interesting about these pies. I mean, I'm looking at these beautiful pictures. They're making me really hungry. I mean, we've got one here of the sour cream lingonberry pie. Lingonberry, that's kind of a Scandinavian thing, isn't it?
It is. It is. And that was one of the reasons why we did that. We started out with in that sour cream line, Helen had the original with the sour cream raisin with a tall meringue on it. And we had played around with some recipes in the back kitchen in the old Norske Nook. And Sherry Brown, who's mentioned in the book also, her and I were mixing sour cream up one day, and we got a little bit of the raspberry juice in it. Of course, it turned bright red, and we thought, well, what are we going to do with that? You know, so I mentioned to Sherry, I said, well, you know, let's just throw some raspberry in there and see what it tastes like. And that's how that particular pie was born. We and from that pie, then we added, you know, blueberry apple and a whole line of them. The lingonberry we decided on. We had quite a few requests for lingonberries because it is a Norwegian community, and so we started making pies with those, and they really blend well. They're kind of a flavor profile about halfway between a blueberry and a cranberry, and they're only grown in the northern latitudes and in Scandinavia. I think Canada is starting to grow some too also now, but most of ours come from Norway and Sweden and Finland.
I see there's a pie named after you, Jerry. It's called the Jerry Flicka and Butterscotch Pie. You're speaking to us right now from the Norske Nook located in Hayward, and according to the recipe, whenever you stop in there, you have a slice of this pie. Have you had any today, Jerry?
I will a little later. I usually when I first come to work, I have a slice of pie. You know, I'm sorry to admit, but I'll have a slice of pie, and then sometimes I'll have a little breakfast, and that'll be my meal for the day. And then before I go home, if I get a little bit snacky, then I always have the butterscotch.
So that's a consistent favorite of yours.
It is.
These are some very beautiful food photos. The styling is exquisite. What was the process? I understand that your collaborator probably had a lot to do with that, Cindy Borton Parker.
Yes. Actually, we had picked out a few photographers in the area. Raphael, the editor down in the University of Wisconsin Press, he writes for a few food magazines, and he was really, you know, really wanted to make sure that we got great pictures. So we submitted some from a couple of our friends who are photographers, and he really was not impressed. And so he got a hold of Cindy, and Cindy called me up and said, well, they really want us to get a food stylist, which I personally had never heard of before, and a food photographer. And I'm like, really? And so I thought, well, if, you know, they want us to do that, and if the book is, you know, envisioned the way that I have thought about it, and wanting to make sure that there was gorgeous photos on there, and they're the experts, so we went ahead and Cindy contacted the food stylist and food photographer out of Minneapolis. And they came over and spent almost a whole week taking photos, those photos and some other photos of just food. And it was quite a process. I was out west at the time that they had come, but Cindy worked with them closely and, you know, baked all the pies and made sure that they looked great. And then they took them out there and then they assorted crumbs on the plates to make sure they looked just right.
Mm-hmm.
and they did. They turned out beautiful. And I am so glad we did that. Raphael had suggested that, and Cindy really worked hard with them to do that.
At the back of the book, we have some specialty-type desserts, and I noticed that some of these, like the, is it krumkaka?
Yes, correct.
And the, well, lefse, oh, one of my real favorites. They require special equipment, and you sell this equipment in your shops or online? How do you do that?
We do. At our old, the original Norske Nook, we turned into a gift shop, coffee shop.
Mm.
And in there we have a lot of that, the equipment for it. And we have it also available online at our website, which is norskenook.com.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we encourage people to go there, and also if they are interested in ordering these books, they can get them from that by going to norskenook.com, and the ones they order from us will be signed by both Cindy and I.
Oh,
so.
And while you're on the website, you can look up the krumkaka iron and the special corrugated rolling pin that they have, the lefse grill, the lefse stick. The rosette iron, the sandbachel tins. Wow. You get all this stuff from Scandinavia?
Some of it does actually come from there.
Uh-huh.
The sandbachel tins, we still use the traditional sandbachel tins. A lot of the newer ones have these scalloped edges, and ours are very sharp, pointed, you know, in their ring, the very pointed. And they're hard to find now. We actually have been going to a lot of estate sales, thrift sales, things
really?
Like that in the areas, trying to get these tins for the stores because the new ones come and they're usually the larger scalloped size, which both work fine, and they both work. But my mother always used the really sharp pointed ones, and it's hard for me to break away from that tradition.
You prefer the old fashioned ways.
Yep, yep.
Including how you make your pies.
Exactly.
Well, Jerry, this must be fun to have this book finally coming out. Are you excited?
Very much so. We have some book signings scheduled at each of the stores coming up in May, and some bookstores in Wisconsin, and I believe Minnesota. I think we have one over in Minnesota also coming up, and we're really excited. We're having a lot of fun.
Well, they did a lovely job on the book, so I know that you're a man who expects things to be high quality, so you must be pretty pleased.
Very much so. Very, very much so. It was really interesting. I sent a book to my mom, the very first one that I got, and I signed it, and Cindy signed it for her because she also knows my mother, and we sent it out to her. She lives in Vancouver, Washington,
mm-hmm.
And when she got it, she was so excited. She called me right away, and she goes, "Oh, it's so beautiful! I had no idea that it was going to be this beautiful." You know, I was just expecting, you know, like a church cookbook.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Well, Jerry, we really appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're listening to the best of the Book Nook, and that was The Pie Guy, recorded exactly 10 years ago. We did that interview on this date 10 years ago. 2015. Where does the time go? Fortunately, there's still a lot of pie to be eaten, and we're going to go back to reality in our final segment. But first, this. The Best of the Book Nook continues on WYSO. We had our first two segments in Dreamland talking about pies in Wisconsin. And now it's back to reality. I'm sorry about that. But it seems like it's a constant cycle throughout history. Do we collaborate with fascists or do we resist them? Well, Rita Gabus found out that her grandfather chose to collaborate with the fascists, the Nazis in Lithuania during World War II. And when she discovered this horrifying thing, she researched it and she wrote a book about it. Let's revisit an excerpt from an interview for a book called A Guest at the Shooter's Banquet on The Best of the Book Nook. You're listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. My guest today is Rita Gabus. Her book is A Guest at the Shooter's Banquet, My Grandfather's SS Past, My Jewish Family, A Search for the Truth. You found out in your research that there had been two very horrible, dramatic massacres in this area,
yeah.
And you wondered, was my grandfather involved in these? You really wanted to know, didn't you?
Right, I did. And I've made the point, you know, in different talks that I've given and also in the book that I really did not want to go the route of supposition or use proximity as a way of saying, well, he had to have been here or there. So I double and triple sourced all the material in the book that concerns him directly. The two massacres that occurred, the first one occurred September 26th of 1941. There was a roundup of most of the Jews of the Sventionis region, 8,000. There were a few Jews who were considered useful Jews. Most of us know that term. They were allowed to stay behind in various ghettos that were literally being built as the rest of the Jewish community were being carted away. An order had gone out for village people to come with carts if they had them, and if they didn't show up with the carts, they were going to be jailed or fined. Something would happen to them. So there was pressure on the local population at that level. In terms of their part in this, nonetheless, the Jews were marched and they were taken by cart, those who couldn't do the march from the different areas in the region. The distance from Sventionis to the killing site, which is called today polygon, which is simply a Polish word for shooting range. It had been, in the days when the area belonged to Poland, a place where Polish officers would come and they would practice their shooting and also stable their horses. So this was the destination point to first place the 8,000 Jews in makeshift barracks and stables. And they were kept there for a bit of time. Some were even taken out to work. They were given very little, of course, in the way of rations. Some of the Jews who had been allowed to stay behind in the ghettos brought them bread and potatoes. But ultimately, they were taken out, first the men and then the women, by truck, 40, 50 at a time, driven to the pit, which had been dug out by locals in the town Novosventionis, which is, again, I think I'd mentioned, or perhaps I didn't mention, about 7 miles from Sventionis itself. It's a railroad town. They were taken, they were lined up at the edge of the pit, and they were shot. That was the first action. So, as I've said in another interview, it would have been very easy for me to say, well, this happened 7 miles away from my grandfather's office. He was one of the commanders of the area, so of course he was involved with this. But that wasn't enough for me. I really wanted to find, you know, something that would substantiate his presence or his absence. And that was part of the reason my research took so long.
And you interviewed some people who managed to survive this purge.
I did. I interviewed survivors, but of course if you survived, you weren't there, right? So I also managed, I was extremely lucky. I had been told, you know, by people who had a very vested interest in helping me research this massacre and also my grandfather's collaboration, that there was nobody left who had been an eyewitness or near eyewitness to Polygon. And 4 years in, through an incredibly circuitous route of emails and phone calls in four different countries, I finally got an email saying, you know, from one of my wonderful researchers saying, we found some elderly people in Novos Vencionis, the town where Polygon is located, who remember and who are willing to talk to you. And I made my reservation, I think, that day and flew over to interview them.
Rita Gabus joins us. Her book is A Guest at the Shooter's Banquet, My Grandfather's SS Past, My Jewish Family, A Search for the Truth. And you kept going back to Lithuania. At one point in the memoir, you say, I don't want to keep going back here.
Right.
But you did, didn't you?
I did. I sometimes as a researcher, I would feel stumped, and it's, I'm very lucky because I'm married to a long-form investigative journalist who's an editor, and he would say to me, this is what it's like. This is what investigative journalism is. It takes a long time to gather your information. And so that gave me the extra push I needed often. And then just the fact that I felt an enormous sense of responsibility, you know, in a very private way, for what my grandfather might or might not have been involved in directly. And so, you know, in those times when I felt like I'd had enough and couldn't go back, in part because it was very painful, you know, I kept going because of that feeling of responsibility. And I also just want to say that, you know, whatever personal pain I might have felt and you know, going to these shooting sites and interviewing people about the greatest traumas of their lives, and I'm so grateful to them for sharing this information with me, whatever, you know, minor emotional pain I incurred because of that cannot be compared in the slightest to what these survivors went through, who were gracious enough to talk to me some for many hours during interviews, and obviously also, you know, to the fate of those who lost their lives simply because they were Jewish or were in the wrong place at the wrong time.
I had always wanted to go to Lithuania. It had been one of my lifelong dreams because of my father's family. I wanted to know where they came from, and back in 2004, I went over there for 3 weeks in the spring, and before I went, I was looking at a possible itinerary, and I looked at some of the places, and I read some of the history, and I went to Kaunas, or Kovno, and I was aware of what had happened there to the Jewish the Jewish population during the war. And the whole time I was in that city, I was there for a week, I had this just terrible, haunted, dark feeling. And I can remember in the middle of the night, one night I was staying near the downtown, and I heard this woman screaming like she was being murdered. And I just had this horrible, horrible feeling. It's just a haunted place. Did you feel a sense of haunting when you were in some of these places?
You know, I have to say, I feel like you're channeling part of my own experience. Yes, I did, and I gave a talk recently at the wonderful Center for Jewish History at YIVO here in New York City, and it was one of two talks, and I was describing my first visit to Vilna, and walking through the empty Jewish quarter, empty of Jews, anyway, and many of the shops boarded up. Those that were open now run primarily by Lithuanians. At that time, there was a lack of signage in terms of the places that were, you know, one might call them the sacred places of the Vilna ghetto that were still left. And I felt just the kind of desolation that you're talking about. It's almost as if, the place itself absorbed the tragedy that happened, and if you're receptive to it, you feel it.
And Vilna was really the heart and soul of much of European Jewish culture, and
yes.
Such a beautiful city.
Yes, yes.
Or Vilnius, I guess we should say, too.
Well, it's called both, you know. It's
right.
Called Vilna by the Jewish community, and then Vilnius by the Lithuanians. And interestingly enough, my mother, you know, when I was a child, she spoke to me, of course, about her own war experience, which had traumatized her deeply. She was 11 when she moved with her father to Svencionis. I should mention that during the Stalin's purges, during the Russian occupation before the Germans, my mother's mother, my Lithuanian grandmother, my Babita, was arrested by the NKVD, taken to Lubyanka prison and tortured, and then sentenced to 15 years hard labor in a prison camp in different prison camps throughout the Gulag. So in a way, my book bears witness to both of those occupations, although the center of it is, as you say, an almost detective-like story of unraveling or trying to ravel, to tie together the different threads of information about my grandfather to create a whole narrative.
And when we meet this woman who survived the Gulag, wow, what a woman.
Right.
Amazing.
She had said that had she known what was coming, she would have slit her throat. She was a tough, remarkably tough. When I met her, actually, at a certain point in my young life, she had survived, and she was thin as a rail. And you looking at her, it was hard to imagine the kind of toughness of spirit that she had, but she had it.
Mm.
There was a story that she told, which was that they knew that things were starting to get better in the prison camp when there was a cat running around.
Oh.
And all the inmates realized that no one had eaten it, that it was running free.
That's an amazing barometer of well-being.
Mm. Right.
The book is A Guest at the Shooter's Banquet, My Grandfather's SS Pass, My Jewish Family, A Search for the Truth. Rita Gabus wrote it. She joins us on the program today. The Shooter's Banquet refers to a celebration that was held after the 2 days of murder.
Mm-hmm.
And you wonder, was grandfather there?
Yes, and I pursued that question relentlessly. And when I first learned about these banquets, some people call them parties, but the specific banquet in Svencionis, the person who told me about it was a 91-year-old wonderful poet named Zenon Tumilovic. And in part because he's a poet and my métier is poetry, and as a researcher, you always have to kind of listen with, both full-heartedly and also questioning everything that you hear. I thought it was hyperbole. And then I came to find out that, in fact, this was a rather common occurrence.
On the cover, there's a photo, and I think the way they cropped it is very masterful. I'm assuming this is your grandfather.
Yes, it is.
And they've cut it off, so it's just the bottom half of his head and then his body. And there's something about his expression and his lips. There's something
right.
There's something about it. It's just really stunning.
Well, thank you. And the wonderful art directors at Bloomsbury, I think, did a great job with the cover. I think for me, the fact that only half of his face is visible is very important. And it's representative of, the unknown man.
Mm-hmm.
Inside the man I did know.
Mm.
And again, to kind of bring it back to a larger perspective, I think all of us have people in our lives who, to greater or lesser degrees, we feel we know very well. But then on the other hand, we also sense there's a missing piece there.
We really don't know them, do we? We don't know most of the people that we think we know, do we?
One could argue that.
And that was Rita Gabus, recorded 10 years ago on the Best of the Book Nook. Her only appearance on the program, talking about her grandfather, who she thought was a really nice guy, and then she found out he did some really bad things during World War II in Lithuania, collaborating with the Nazis. He was a Lithuanian police chief. And the Book Nook comes your way every Saturday morning at 7 and every Sunday morning at 10:30. And during one period of the program, we did bring you just one show a week, and we repeated it. And I'm amazed how often I hear from people who still believe that is our schedule. Well, for the last 11 years, we've been doing two entirely different programs every weekend. And we'll have a totally different one for you tomorrow at 10:30, when my guest will be Ross Benesch. And you don't want to miss this interview. The book is called 1999. The Year Low Culture Conquered America and Kickstarted Our Bizarre Times. We'll be talking to Ross about professional wrestling and how it has influenced our political environment today. We'll talk about the Columbine shooting. It took place in 1999, the first truly notorious school shooting. They blamed video games for the violence. Well, Ross has a more nuanced view of that. And he doesn't really think video games are responsible. In fact, he points to the fact that we've always demonized something in this country for violence, apparently blaming it for instigating violence. Back in the late 19th century, they blamed dime novels. "Ruined by dime novels," screamed an 1883 New York Times headline about a young man who had committed some violence. And then it went on to motion pictures. In 1907, Chicago's city council passed an ordinance to censor movies. They were causing violence. Then came radio. Well, you know what radio does. Oh, my. It causes so much violence, doesn't it? We won't even talk about that. After that, the uproar died out because we had something else to blame. And it was comic books. And then after that, it was rock and roll. Rock and roll was causing violence. Following rock, it was television. Remember television when it was an evil influence that caused violence? Well, I do. And then by 1999, with Columbine, it was video games. And did you know that today, video games are so part of the mainstream, so acceptable, that according to Ross Benesch, they are the largest entertainment franchise in the world. Multi-billion dollar enterprises. You can add everything else up. Movies, music, all other forms of entertainment. And video games beats them all combined. And they're very accepted now. And people aren't blaming them for violence. They'll find something else, won't they? The proliferation of video games in 1999 and other things like the Jerry Springer Show, according to Ross Benesch, influenced the culture that we have today. When you watch politicians interacting with one another, think about it. Are they acting like pro wrestlers? Is that how they acted in the Oval Office with President Zelensky when they ganged up on him in the Oval Office? Was that like a pro wrestling thing? Think about it. Tune in tomorrow when my guest will be Ross Benesch. We'll be talking about 1999, the year low culture conquered America and kickstarted our bizarre times. He's been on the program before. He is an analyst, and he writes some very provocative books, and I love this one. And if you are interested in this kind of thing, I also review it tomorrow in the Cox, Ohio newspapers. So check out my review and check out the interview tomorrow at 10:30 right here on your public radio station, bringing you all kinds of radio at 91.3 FM.